Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. A dreary day in January isn't the most obvious time to think about the next season's garden, but it should be. If you plan to have a spring garden, now is the time to prepare. Known as Ohio's Garden Sage, Deborah Kanapke is an author, teacher, lecturer, and blogger. We'll post a link to her blog on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. And she joins us today. Welcome back.
Ah, nice to be back.
It is a dreary day out there, so,
it is, but it really doesn't feel like winter. I heard birds sort of chittering some of their spring songs last week when we were up in the 50s.
New Year's Eve was balmy.
Yes, it was. It was in the high 50s?
Something, yeah.
Something like
it was
that.
Balmy. There wasn't even a chilly breeze. So what does all that mean to your average Central Ohio gardener?
I took a walk in the garden this morning in preparation for being on the radio because I wanted to say what's happening in my garden.
Yeah.
Well, my garlic's up. My irises are starting. My daylilies are about half an inch tall. There's a lot going on. Some things are staying tucked, though, because many of our plants need cold over the winter to come up in the spring,
okay.
A lot of our bulbs. So I haven't seen any sign of daffodils because I don't think they've gotten their cold requirement.
If they don't get their cold requirement, does that mean we'll have a lesser bounty of daffodils in the spring?
That's a darn good question.
And we don't know?
But that's something for me to look up. But I'm assuming we're going to get hit with cold at some point. It's not like they need a lot of cold, but they do need some vernalization. That's what that is called, that cold requirement.
Hibernating kind of for plants? Or?
Well, I guess you could call it hibernation for plants, but they do need cold to kind of trigger those enzymes, hormones, whatever that happen in the bulb that say, okay, grow leaves, set flower bud.
Okay.
And bloom beautifully for all those human beings who need you in the spring.
Can I still plant bulbs? They're on sale. That's why
I know
asking.
They're on sale. Everything is so late this year. I have a guilty confession. I just planted my shallots like on New Year's Day. I have no idea what they're going to do, but this is a grand experiment.
But you could dig the ground and the ground was ready.
Yeah, the
to
ground
take.
Was
yeah.
fine.
Yeah.
My concern would be is they wouldn't have enough time in the ground to get that good root structure
yeah.
to be able to pull in enough nutrients from the soil.
Okay.
But I don't know.
Yeah.
We may have a delayed spring because we haven't had winter yet. And then winter may hit in March and they may get their cold requirement in March. This is so strange. I don't feel like
don't
I don't have.
Okay, the show's over with.
Okay, we're done.
We don't know.
No.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Deb Kanapke, author, teacher, lecturer, blogger, Ohio's Garden Sage. We're talking about what to do about your garden in the winter. I have a question to ask you. I bought for a few people those bulbs of those big,
the red, beautiful amaryllis.
Amaryllis.
Mm-hmm.
How, and they were just in like wax. How can they grow without being in soil?
They store a lot of energy. You notice how big those bulbs
yep.
are. And they're able to send up leaves and bloom without being in soil, without nutrients from dormancy. However, eventually they'll run out of energy and you probably will only get that 1 year out
and
of it.
And then it crashes. Okay.
Then it'll crash the next year. That's what paper whites, you know, when we start paper whites in
the forest,
water or
the,
whatever, the
yeah.
forest bulbs.
Yeah.
You can, well, a lot of those aren't hardy in our soil, but some of them are, and you can put them in the soil and they probably won't bloom for you the next year. If they'll have enough energy to put roots in, maybe put some leaves up, get some photosynthesizing going, and then probably not bloom, but then bloom for you the second year.
Okay.
So they're using up their stored resources, which is what bulbs do. Bulbs, corms, tubers, and rhizomes. That takes them through those tough times in the environments that they're from. It takes them through those times so that they can live.
Hmm.
Yeah, but amaryllis, they're beautiful. Mine haven't bloomed yet because they don't they don't need a cold requirement. They're tropical.
Yeah, they want to be
mm-hmm.
indoors, right?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose we could talk about indoor plants today, too.
Oh, we could talk about anything
we
you
about
want.
Anything we
I
want.
Have a ton of stuff here
yeah,
on this
she
table.
She brought her usual collection of books,
and
including
stuff?
What's the sluggy one?
Oh, the 50 Ways to Kill a Slug.
And does now, it actually talk about killing slugs?
Yes, it does.
Or is it just a joke?
Oh, no, okay. No. And, okay. And it actually says, serious and silly ways to kill or outwit the garden's number one enemy. And I have used this book. I have to
is
admit.
Is a slug the number one enemy?
Nah.
Okay, I was going to say,
deer.
I don't. Okay, yeah. Deer and aphids, you know.
Yeah.
Let's see, Brad in Orient, you're on the air. Hi, Brad.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I received some iris bulbs maybe about a month or two ago, mm-hmm. and I've just got them in a box in the garage, and I kind of don't know where to go with them, or can I put them in the ground, or do I need to start them indoors, or can I do both?
Well, you could do a grand experiment like I'm doing this year with some of my plants and do some of each, but you can still put them in the soil. Will you get blooms? Now, you say bulbs, so I'm assuming iris bulbs, you're talking about the cute little ones,
yeah,
little tiny ones that come up first thing. They may not have time to get...
that root structure.
That root structure. Yeah. And they may not bloom for you, but I'm pretty sure they'll send up leaves. So I put them in the ground rather than let them rot in the garage to be eaten by mice.
Okay. All right. There you go, Brad. Put them in the ground. I mean, the ground's ready, willing, and
yeah,
able.
Right
it just
now,
may not be
nothing's
ready,
frozen.
Willing, and able for this year.
Normally, yeah. I could not tell you on January 3rd to go plant bulbs.
Right. So, hey. And Gail in Columbus, you're on the air with Deb Kanapke. Hi, Gail.
At 1. Can you go in at 12:30?
Gail, you're on the air.
Okay. Oh, hi. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, I just had a quick question. You know, because fall was delayed,
mm-hmm.
and I have some trees that never did change colors, and they did not lose their leaves.
What kind
so
of tree?
I have no clue.
Oh,
I just got a bunch of crazy trees. Oh, yeah, and two of them are black walnuts.
Okay.
I know that because they fall on my car.
Okay.
So the black walnuts did not lose their leaves?
And they didn't, the walnuts are still on the tree.
Okay, the walnuts. Okay, and I can explain that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So what does it mean when a tree doesn't lose its leaves?
Well...
this is all new.
One of the things that causes, there's something called the abscission layer. This is a layer... where the petiole, which is the stem of the leaf, meets the tree.
Okay.
And this abscission layer develops as part of dormancy, and it means that the leaf will leave the tree. So this, it, and then it kind of zips apart. So imagine this in your head.
Uh-huh.
We didn't get the right conditions this fall for it to zip apart. We didn't get the right cold at the right time. And so some trees hold their leaves normally, like oaks, young oaks especially, and young beeches. But this year we had more trees holding on to their leaves. And in this case, it sounds like her walnut trees, that her walnuts are hanging on, which sounds very strange to me. But that could be because the abscission layer did not form. So they're just hanging on there. And at some point, that layer will form and it will zip apart and the nuts will fall.
Okay.
But the same with the leaves.
I have noticed a lot of trees with a lot of leaves on them.
The trees.
Now that she mentions
it. And a lot of the pears have kept their leaves.
Like the.
The calorie pear that we all love to hate.
Yeah, right.
A lot of them did not get the right cold requirement.
Is that going to affect the blooms that we love to hate in the spring?
Probably not.
Okay.
Probably the fire blight will affect the blooms more than anything else.
Okay.
A lot of the pears had fire blight this year. I don't know if you noticed, but looked like they were burned.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Not
that black
uh-huh, black sooty.
Yeah. Huh.
And fire blight in crab apples often result in something we call a shepherd's crook, where the end of the branch makes this kind of curled shepherd's crook look. But in the pears, I didn't notice that as much. I just noticed like that looked like someone set fire to the tree. We had one of those at the governor's residence. And I looked at it and I thought, good Lord, it was covered in fire blight.
Hey, do you know if the new governor is going to get involved with the residents again?
I believe so.
Okay.
That's still going on in the whole transition. I believe they are going to be living in the house part time.
Okay.
And I know that future Governor DeWine is very interested in native plants, which makes me very happy. we will see, you know, I'm on the board of the Friends of the Ohio Governor's Residence and Heritage Garden. And we're all just kind of waiting because we will respond to what the governor and the first lady want.
Hope Taft started that, right?
Yes, yeah, she did in 2001.
Hasn't been that long, believe it or not.
I think.
Gail, your trees have not died. They'll come back. We'll see what happens. That's the best we can do. Let's see. Carol in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Carol.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Question has to do with rain gardens that are coming into my neighborhood soon.
Mm-hmm.
And I went on their website and they have a list of flowers and plantings, and I've seen them on other streets. And in the winter, they're dead as doornails, very ugly. And I wondered what about the use of dwarf conifers or creeping junipers? And is there any height restriction on things like that can be planted in the rain garden?
Those are excellent questions. Yeah. I imagine you're in Clintonville, probably, because that's where the rain gardens are mainly being built right now. Dwarf conifers don't stay dwarf, and there is a height restriction. You cannot impede the visual people coming down the street because you don't want to accidentally run over someone's pet or someone's child. So there is a definite height restriction. Also, these rain gardens are meant to capture water and then let it slowly drain into our sewer systems. You know, slow it down, capture stuff that's on the streets, and keep junk from going into our waterways. The conifers, most of them, are not built, do not like wet feet. So if you put a creeping juniper in there and you have successive rain events like we've had this year, that juniper is going to die. It cannot take that much water.
Yeah.
There was discussion about evergreen plants, and for the most part, conifers were just thrown out the window.
It's just not the right environment.
And that's why you're looking at a lot of grasses, a lot of prairie plants that will take that kind of inundation and then the water leaving and then it coming back and it leaving. So what we're looking for in rain gardens are really adaptable plants, and not necessarily water lilies, because the water's not there all the time.
Right,
because I've had people say, why don't they put water lilies in here?
Milkweed would be good, wouldn't
it? Yeah, milkweed, swamp milkweed you're seeing a lot. Yeah. Purple coneflower, you're seeing some of the grasses that will take that kind of water and then
drought. Because
that's the other side of it. If it doesn't rain, these plants better be able to handle dry soil.
A lot of the rain gardens I'm seeing being built around where I live, they're using a lot of stone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's pretty attractive.
Mm-hmm. And it's a different aesthetic.
Yeah.
It means you have to shift your mind around what something's going to look like. You know, and I have to say this, I'm probably going to get hung for this, but we've been sort of brainwashed that everything's supposed to be green and grass-like and very neat and tidy. Nature's not like that. And the rain gardens, what is trying to be done, and I've been involved on them on several different levels, is that we're trying to get them to look more natural, even though they're a big hole in the ground, you know? Mm-hmm. So we're working with engineering and natural systems and trying to make that work together and trying to stop sewage and the whatever's on our streets. You know, think of all that rubber and oil and things that get on our street that are going into our waterways and polluting them. So, in fact, we're under a consent decree from the United States EPA. Clean up your act. We're not the only city. There's a whole, just about every city that has old infrastructure is under that consent decree. We're being sued, and we will pay fines if we don't fix it.
Hmm. Carol, thanks a lot for your call. It was great questions. We are talking about gardening. Yes, it is the dead of winter. It's a strange winter so far.
Yes.
We're going to talk about our precipitation records. That's kind of interesting. My guest, Deborah Knapke, has her charts already willing and able to work with us. So if you have a question or comment for Deb, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. We'll be right back. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about winter gardening right now and all the things you can do in the winter to prepare your garden for the spring and summer and the fall. If you have a question or comment, my guest is Deborah Kanapke. She's an author, teacher, lecturer, blogger, and Ohio's garden sage. We'll have a link to her blog on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Questions or comments, 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's talk about those rain levels. We just hit a new record. They've been keeping track of this for how many years now?
Here it is. 1879.
Wow.
So this is a record year. We got 55.18 inches of precipitation this year, which is a combination of snow and rain. Usually we get between 38 and 39 inches on average per year.
Wow.
Of rainfall.
So this is
pretty high.
Over 20 inches more.
38. Well, 15. 15 inches.
Okay, gotcha.
Wait a minute. Yeah. 16 inches.
Okay.
Over 16 inches more of rain. When last week I was looking, we were already at 53.9. Which was just below the old record, which was 54.96. And I thought, ooh, that's 1 inch. And by golly, we got it. As it rained on New Year's Eve day, I said, we're gonna set the record. And we did.
What does this mean for gardening?
It means a variety of things. Last year, people probably saw that their plants were stressed because we had so much rain. And it just was, the ground was soggy more often than not, it appeared. This fall was very wet when plants are going dormant and roots are slowing down, and so they're not taking up as much water. So I'm suspecting we're going to see a lot of root rot. For older plants, maybe they'll deal with it better. I don't know. Again, where's my crystal ball?
Yeah.
But I know I lost a lot of plants in my rock gardens and my dry areas, my yard.
Succulents?
Yeah, my succulents. I lost hens and chicks. Do you know how tough those plants are?
They sound like babies, but they're not.
They were rotted out. Yeah. I would touch them and they just fall apart.
Yeah.
So I've had hens and chicks, my rock garden in the backyard, which is on a slope.
Yeah.
I lost plants.
That's amazing. I mean, I can imagine like where mine are situated, my succulents, they're just, it's flat out. I mean, I don't even know, but I'm sure that they're shot.
And I've lost some conifers. I've lost some conifers that are my Pinus banksii, Uncle Fogey, really fun. He's on the ground. Well, half of him is dead.
Let me go back to the succulents real quickly. With succulents, they are tough as nails, strangely. But with your hens and chicks, could they come back in the spring if it dries out?
The ones that fell apart,
do you think there's something down there? Oh, really? Okay.
They are on a very shallow root system. Well, not very shallow, but pretty shallow. And they have pups and babies on the side. So if those rolled off and are just kind of sitting on top of the soil, those will come back.
Okay.
But the ones that are older, the ones that I could see the discoloration in the deep part of the rosette, those have rotted and those are dead.
Okay.
I lost probably about 4/5 of my succulents in my high planter right by my front door. They're all hens and chicks of different kinds.
Uh-huh. And it's a beautiful collection.
Uh-huh. And I will be replanting that this spring.
Because
most of them died.
Deb needs her succulents.
I do, and they're beautiful.
So. Let's see. Rusty in Mount Vernon, you're on the air. Hi, Rusty.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I have a question about canna lilies. I got four in a bag from a friend, and I transplanted them beside my mother's house, Sunnyside, when we do get sun. And they came back in 2 years. I filled up probably 2 milk crates. I dug them up 2 years ago, and I divided them, washed them off, and I kept them inside. And then the following spring, I transplanted them last spring. Mm-hmm. And they came back really well, but I thought, you know, from the size of the tubers, they are tubers, right?
They're actually rhizomes. They're rhizomes, yeah, but that's good.
Rhizomes like
lilies, irises.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here.
Go ahead. Sorry.
But I put more mulch on top of them because they did survive one winter, but it was a warm winter.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it's on the sunny side of the house. And that was just because people always told me that they're tropical and they need to come in every year. Is that true or false?
It's true and false.
Okay.
It's true and false because some of them, if they're in a sunny site, there are some at Columbus State Community College that are the old-fashioned red canna lily that have been on the sunny side of this building for years, and they come up every year because the heat of the building keeps that soil warm. If you have that same kind of situation in your garden and they came back once before, chances are, unless we go into a deep freeze this winter, they're going to easily come back this winter. Now, having said that, there are some cannas that will not come back, even with a sunny side and a warm building, because they are more zone 7 to 8. And the past couple of years, we've had zone 6 winters. In fact, last year we had a zone 7 winter. This year we're on a zone 9 winter right now.
Crazy.
Zone 8. We did get down to 17 degrees Fahrenheit. So I guess that's a zone 8.
That's true.
I forgot. So, but it was brief. It's right here on this chart.
Yeah, right.
So, but you will have some cannas that will not come back because they're more tropical than others. Some are hardier, and that we have that in plants. Some are more hardy than others. So if they came back before in a warm winter, and if we stay on the same kind of temperature regime that we're on, chances are they'll come back again, especially if you put mulch on top to protect them. So hope it works for you.
Okay, Rusty, thanks for that call. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about what to do in the garden in the winter. My guest is Deborah Kanapke, author, teacher, lecturer, blogger, Ohio's Garden Sage. Questions or comments, 614-292-8513. And Gail in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Gail.
Hi, Ann. Hi, Deb. This is Gail from Yoga on High.
Okay.
Hey, so my question is, I have left all of my plants standing on my perennials, my butterfly bush, sunflowers, everything. I have not cut any of the dead stuff off because I had heard that the birds like to eat that stuff all winter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, when should I cut everything back?
Okay. So for your sunflowers, which are annuals, once the seeds are gone, you can cut those back to the ground and let the roots just dissolve into it because they're not going to come back for you. Some people will recommend, though, that you only cut them back to about any of your plants, cut them back to about 8 to 10 inches because we will have our native bees use those stems in the spring as breeding grounds for their eggs. So you can decide if you want to do that or not. I typically leave a lot of my stems up of varying diameters because they become bee nurseries.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, in the spring, early to mid-spring. We have a lot of bees that do that. We also have a lot of ground nesting bees, but we could talk bees forever. But for your perennials, you really don't want to take those down to the ground because at this time of the year, because those stems protect that crown. So I usually wait until late winter, which is usually I get a warm day in late February, early March, and I go and I cut all that down and I chop it up right there and let it sit there on top of the soil. If you have grasses, a good time to take those grasses down is in late February and chop them up lightly because then you will see birds take those for their nesting material. So there's a lot of things that the animals, birds, bees, insects use our plants as their nurseries. So we don't want to be too ruthless in cutting them down. Mm. I do not believe in the mean, clean, green, or mean and clean fall, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
But if anything is diseased, please take that down and take that to your bad compost pile or get rid of it in the way that you do. So I hope that answered your question, Gail. I gave you a whole bunch of little factoids in there.
All right. Gail, thanks for that call. Sandy in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Sandy.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I'm driving. You're merging into traffic. But, oh, it's so nice to talk to you. And I wanted to get back to Carol with her rain garden.
Uh-huh.
Because I have an area in my backyard that slopes down. And when it rains, it stays really wet for a long time. It's underwater. In fact, in the spring, when we have our spring rain, sometimes I have migrating birds, ducks that hang out there for a couple of days. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Respond. Yeah. And, but I find I have a few plants that do really well there. Of course, daylilies, who don't care if it's wet, if it's dry, whatever, they do great. In the shady areas, my hostas do good. I have a sedum. I think it's an autumn joy, probably. It does well. So all those plants, I think, would do pretty good probably in her rain garden because they don't, you know, that area in the summer can be really dry, too. I don't water them.
Uh-huh.
You know, my theory is if they survive on their own, good, and if they don't, if they need extra water, they're out of there.
You're ruthless, Sandy.
Sounds good.
Yeah, yeah. Stay, you know, if they can live in my yard without extra water, they stay. If I have to water them, they got to go.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
A couple points I'd like to respond to.
Uh-huh.
First of all, Carol can't choose the plants. The city of Columbus chooses the plants, or the engineers, or the designers.
Yeah.
So for those,
for the city rain gardens, right.
And daylilies were suggested at one point, but I think because they spread so much, they're not so sure how they want to use them. And also, Sandy's garden in the back, while it may be a rain garden of sorts, most rain gardens are designed to drain a little more quickly. So what she has is sort of a seasonal pool.
and a retention pond?
Not quite a retention,
okay.
Because those usually hold water for longer,
okay,
and are meant to. But it's kind of that in between, and it sounds like it developed all on its own, you know, a low spot in the yard.
Mm-hmm.
And sedums, it's funny how sedum autumn joy can survive that. But if they're in water too much, they will rot too, even though they're a succulent.
Sounds like she's just found the right mix for hers.
Just found the perfect mix for hers. So that's good. Thank you, Sandy.
Yeah, thanks, Sandy. And hostas, I agree. They can take a lot of moisture.
They can. When they go dry, there are some hostas that deal with drought better than others.
Yeah.
Again, we have these plants that we use in our gardens, but there's a sort of a continuum of what they'll take depending on the cultivars and the species.
Let's see now. I've got Steve and Heath. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, Ann, I was going to have a follow-up story to the question you had earlier about the lady whose trees weren't falling off the leaves weren't falling off the trees.
Yeah.
We had a huge branch in our neighborhood a couple of years back in the early fall get broken off in a windstorm. All the leaves were still on the tree and, of course, on the branch. A few weeks goes by. Every leaf on the tree falls. The branch on the ground, all the leaves stayed on it for the entire winter.
Mm-hmm.
They finally just rotted off.
They never went through that process.
What your guest was saying, that there's a chemical reaction that has to take place because before that, I just kind of thought, well, it gets cold and the leaves fall off. But no, it's much more complicated than that.
More interesting, yeah.
Yeah, it is. And it's that quote-unquote zipper, if you will, that abscission layer that develops between the petiole of the leaf and the tree itself. And the tree says, okay, time to go. And some trees do that faster than others. Think of the ginkgo. In 1 or 2 days, all of the ginkgo leaves are down. 1 or 2 days.
Yeah, and that's sad, but it looks like it's like a pool of yellow.
It's so cool.
It is very pretty if you can catch that.
I call it ginkgo rain.
I think I actually wrote about that one time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like a pool, like a puddle of yellow paint. I love it. Steve, thanks a lot for that call. Here's Shimon in Columbus. You're on the air. Hi, Shimon.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Good.
Cool. Hey, I have a question for you. Generally, in March, I plant ghost peppers and Carolina reapers outside in my garden.
Mm-hmm.
And come October, it's time to get rid of the garden. But I normally take a ghost pepper plant and a Carolina reaper plant inside. It's weird. They stay alive, but they no longer grow peppers.
Mm-hmm.
So am I doing something wrong, or do you have any advice?
Unless you want to put them under very high light, they will not bloom and make fruit. Peppers, chilies, they really love the sun. They love the heat. And in our houses, it's not warm enough and it's not bright enough. So they're living, they're existing, and they're fine. But unless you can give them high light, you're not going to get fruit production. The way that fruit production happens in greenhouses over the winter is using either HID lights, high intensity lights, or now there's a lot going on with LED lights. Really good fruit and vegetable production with LEDs. So if you really want to grow peppers inside, you'll have to look at that. But I will warn you, they may not be as hot.
Interesting. Why?
Because they're just not developing the same. The sunlight and heat, being outside
is
different.
Huh.
Is different.
Shimon, thanks a lot for that call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from Heather. She asks, when is the best time to treat your garden /yard with beneficial nematodes to prevent grubs and Japanese beetles?
The best time when it's done in my yard is usually in the March, April time frame, right before it looks like it's going to rain so that rain can soak it in. Mm. You have to catch the developing grubs at a certain stage in life. And I don't know exactly when that is, but you know, the beetles don't come out until it really gets warmer. Mm-hmm. And so that's at that stage in that March, April, and sometimes even May time frame. Is when you're getting them when they're nice and juicy, and then that those beneficial nematodes go in and parasitize them.
I hope that answered your question, Heather. Thanks a lot for that. Are there other ways to get rid of grubs? Since you have your 50 ways to kill a...
Oh, I guess we need 50 ways to kill
a slug. Kill a grub. Right. It's not a grub,
Yeah, but...
You bet.
I mean, there are chemicals that are put down on lawns all the time that kill them, conventional chemicals, although it kills everything else, too.
Yeah.
And the nematodes, these beneficial nematodes, zero in on these grubs specifically. It is their host. And so you're directing your attack as opposed to nuking.
Okay.
There is milky spore, although that is less effective, I've been told, against Japanese beetles. They go more for chafer bugs. And then there are other grubs underground, too. Some good, some not so good. But there are also other organisms underground that work against some of these bad guys. It's just that...
Naturally.
Mm-hmm. It's just that our lawns are so perfect for Japanese beetles and chafer bugs.
That must explain why I don't really have a big problem with those. Because
those roots are really yummy for them.
Our front yard lawn is nice. Our backyard, not so much. All right. We are going to get to more calls. We'll get to some emails. Remember, the address is allsides@wosu.org. The number is 614-292-8513. And we'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. It's our annual winter gardening show. I probably could do these once a week with my guest, Deborah Kanapke, <Okay. laughs> author, teacher, lecturer, blogger, Ohio's Garden Sage. We'll have a link to her blog on our website at wosu.org/allsides. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, we were talking about cutting down perennials earlier. Mm-hmm. What about pruning this time of year?
Well, I just pruned this morning.
Lilacs?
No, I pruned. You don't want to prune lilacs now. You want to prune those in the summer after they bloom.
Right.
But I pruned my little American ironwood or musclewood. So I have a pruning book here. I know on radio you can't see it, but for those that get to see this on tape, it's by one of my favorite authors, Lee Reich. And he, you know, there's all kinds of plants. A lot of your woody plants, now is the time to prune, but please avoid pruning maples.
Just what's the diff?
Because of the sugaring season, which is usually in February and sometimes March.
Who knows this year?
I know. This is going
to
be a weird...
They have to be triggered by cold too, right?
They need deep cold.
Yeah.
And then warm spells for the sugar to rise, for the sap to rise. Mm-hmm. And then we tap them and get the most wonderful product in the world, which is maple syrup. But last year, fortunately, was better year than the 2 years previous. But this year, with it not getting cold, I can imagine maple syrup producers are tearing their hair out right now. This is not the kind of winter they want for a good season. At least that's what I believe. So, but pruning, I had a double leader on a plant, and now is a good time to take it out.
What's a double leader?
Two main branches going up, and that's not good in a tree because usually they get what's called included bark. They start growing together, and you get this real narrow crotch angle, and you get a good wind, and they just split.
Oh, okay.
So didn't want that. I have some other pruning that needs to be done, and it's been so warm. I've been pruning my shrubs, which is thinning them, taking out the old wood, especially on my decorative cornice, dogwoods, the red twig dogwoods. And I take out the old kind of dingy looking ones that are about 3 to 4 years old. And then you get all these bright 1 to 2 year branches that come up. And it's like a beacon in the landscape.
Oh, nice.
So that's what I'm doing right now. Going around looking for crossing branches, dead branches, diseased branches. All those come out this time of year. So pruning is what I do. I walk around with my big loppers and my saw and my pruners.
Except for lilacs.
Lilacs?
And I have a, I have a guy, Greg in Columbus is on the air.
Okay.
You're on the air, Greg. You have a question about a lilac tree.
Okay.
Well, it shouldn't be a tree, of course, but it's starting to get that way.
Yeah.
I inherited it when my wife and I moved into our home in the Forest Park area. Mm-hmm. And it has been neglected, it looks like, for years and years and years. So I went online, not knowing anything about pruning, and you know, got some pretty good instructions as to what to prune and how. But what I got was seemingly contradictory information as to when to prune, ranging from, you know, basically in the late fall, you know, when things are pretty much off the tree, and then other another site was sometime in really late winter, like into March.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought you might have a recommendation.
My recommendation is that you prune your lilac right after it blooms. And the reason why is that lilacs form their flower buds on their tree, on the tree, that summer after they bloom. So your lilac is blooming and you look at it and you think, you know, I want to take off some of these branches and whatever. I prune in the summer for lilac 1 to 2 weeks after it blooms. If there are crossing or dying branches in my lilac that I see when I'm patrolling around my garden this time of year, they do come out. Those you can take off any time of the year. But plants that put their buds on what we call their old wood. We don't like to take all of those blooms away. Now, if you decide you're going to sacrifice your blooms for 1 year to get that tree in shape, that tree or shrub, go for it. You just don't get blooms that 1 year. But don't do heavy pruning if you expect to get flowers the next year on a lilac.
Okay, Greg, thanks a lot for that call. Now I want to turn to Courtney in Gahanna. You're on the air. Hi, Courtney.
Hi, good morning, ladies.
Good
Always
morning.
A pleasure to listen and chat with you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I was calling because we've kind of talked a couple times over the last few times that Deb was on about me naturalizing an area over kind of on the side of my house where it's a very steep slope with prairie wildflowers and other natives. And then we talked about, you know, what are people going to say? It's not golf looking.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I remember now.
So we have
now quadrupled the size over there. And
great.
People come and take pictures
mm-hmm.
and put people in front of them and pose there and take pictures.
Wonderful.
A lady told me that she takes a picture there every day and sends it to her sister that's stationed somewhere so she can remember the beautiful Ohio flowers. And it has just been wonderful. And as I've done more research, I've found out about this program called Monarch Way Station.
Yes.
And yes, I know you would know, Deb. I mm-hmm. knew you would know. And we've had it certified, but I'm trying now to educate people a little bit more. So we have to do something to support our monarchs because the only tree or the only plant that they will lay eggs on or feed on is the milkweed.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
we've got to plant more milkweed because it's been kind of eradicated as people are planting non-natives and things.
And just development. They just wait, mm-hmm. wipe out
right.
so much of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they look a little weedy, I'm not going to lie. So, you know, it's kind of, you have to grow accustomed to the look. But at the back of the border, in a whole lot of sun, they would blend very nicely. And so we put a sign up and we're giving away seeds. But I just thought that would be my new push for help the monarchs, feed the monarchs. And I'm sure Deb can tell us in great and gory detail more about that and what else we could plant to support them.
And I'd like to recommend a book for you to look at. It's by Kylie Balmley, Kylie, K-Y-L-E-E, Balmley, B-A-U-M-L-E-E, I think. She is a fellow garden writer, and she wrote about monarchs. If you look Ooh. It up, it's a fantastic book about how to rear them, how to feed them, what kind of environment they need. Please take a look at it. I wish I had the title at the tip of my tongue, but I don't have it.
Yep.
The Monarch Saving Our Most Loved Butterfly.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
You have it.
That's Kylie. Okay. And she's great, and she's also has a blog, so look up her blog. Okay. There you go, Courtney. Thank and you. Deanna, thanks for your call. Thanks for listening. Let's see. That Alita was fantastic. In Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Alita.
Hi. Wonderful listening to you.
Thank you. I'm a teacher.
I'm off today, and it's wonderful. I get to hear you. my question is, I live on a high, windy hill in Albany.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to be inheriting from a dear friend some hybridized canna, beautiful color, giant cannas.
Mm-hmm.
Wanted to know, how will they withstand the wind? I have the sun, but when we have wind, it gets pretty windy, and I don't have any kind of a windbreak. Should I stake them in any way until they're established?
The cannas, depends on how tall they are. There are some shorter ones that may not be as affected, but many of our cannas grow 4 to 6, and there's even an 8-foot tall canna. So it depends on how tall. If they're going to get really tall, you may have to stake them to keep them up. Otherwise, they may fall over. Their big, huge leaves will catch that wind and just go down. So good luck with that. I'm not fond of staking. However, in this case, on a windy hillside, you will get a beautiful effect with them, but you will have to do a little bit more work. Okay, Alita, thanks for that call. Let's see. Luann in West Mansfield, you're on the air. Hi, Luann.
Oh, my gosh. Hi. I'm a huge fan.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Love you so much. So I'm concerned about, I want to transplant saplings, and I know I have to be careful about how wet it can be because you can mud in the roots. They don't get oxygen.
Mm-hmm. What kind of saplings?
Well, especially tree saplings. Like I got a ton of seedlings at the Franklin County Soil and Water Conservation mm-hmm. District resale.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I healed them in close to my kitchen so I wouldn't miss watering them. But I really do need to transplant them, and time to get away from me.
Mm-hmm. So this spring, in April, April's a good time to start doing that. Transplant them to where you want them in your yard. Give them a good drink once they're in the soil and straight. You've looked at them and they're straight. Make sure you dig deep enough and you know which one of those saplings have deeper roots. And then water them once a week, unless we get the rain we had last year. Once a week for for about the first 4 to 6 weeks. And then after that, every other week, and then just kind of see how it goes.
Just depends on Lau and the rain.
But yeah, but they'll do fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had saplings do really well. The tulip plant, the tulip tree.
Yeah.
It was just one of those little wisps of a thing. And every year the deer would come in and chew it literally down into the ground where you couldn't see it anymore. I'd go, okay, well, that's it. And then on the third year, it grew its first leaf, and it was bigger than the stem of the tree.
Yeah.
It was hilarious.
They're survivors.
And now it's 20 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. Shauna in Cleveland. Hi, Shauna. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm calling because I would like to start a small vegetable garden, and I know nothing at all about gardening. I just wanted to know what book would be recommended.
A good starter book.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
okay.
Now you got her going. We only have four minutes.
All right. There are some fantastic vegetable, and none of them are coming to my mind right now, but you know what?
Shauna, are you on Facebook?
Do you use Facebook?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then go to the All Sides with the Ann Fisher Facebook page, and Deb will put a list, list of about 3 to 5 books. I've got a limit.
Okay, only 5?
Well, all right, whatever. She's going to put a list on there for you, okay? And so check out the
Thank
All Sides Facebook
so
page. You bet. Thanks for
And also
calling,
a few
Shauna.
Tips, too. So take a look. It'll be much later this afternoon.
Okay?
Hey, thank you. Happy
right.
New Year.
Thanks
you
for
too.
Listening, Shauna. Email from Rose. Risa says, my dog keeps digging up my bulbs due to the bone meal I added. Any suggestions? I've never had a dog do that. Of course, my dog's digging up my whole yard right now. But
right, and dogs love to dig. And if they see disturbed soil, they're going to dig. What you can do that would deter them would be to put some bird netting down. They'll get their paws stuck in it, and that might deter them a little bit. Oh. Or you may actually have to fence off your areas. when dogs want to dig, dogs dig.
Yeah, we fence off now.
And so fencing is the ultimate.
Yeah.
So good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with that, Risa. Marty's asked, can you comment on increasing the use of native plants as we plan for the upcoming gardening season? What are your recommendations?
Oh, my gosh. I brought a book, Landscaping with Native Trees. I have more books than I can tell you on native plants and how to plant them. A very good source is native plants that you can put in, especially in alternatives to the invasive plants you may have to take out of your yard, is the Ohio Invasive Plant Council, OIPC. And they have a long list of wonderful native plants to use in the garden. There are other websites too, but what OIPC is it's Ohio.
Yeah.
So that therefore...
Yeah, native is as a native does. I mean, it's not, everywhere is not native, so...
Right. So take a look there. And there, again, I will also on Facebook put some good books for native plants to look at for the spring.
All right. So, Marty, go to the Facebook page. Check that out. Deb's real good about it. It'll be later this afternoon or tomorrow. One thing, if it doesn't get colder this winter and we don't have enough sustained cold, are we or should we expect more pests?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Because the cold is what kills a lot of them and
pushes back on them. And
but I'm just thinking of all the pests we're dealing with, like the woolly aldegid that's eating our hemlocks. And if it doesn't get cold, it's going to be awful this spring. And we're losing a lot of hemlocks in our natural forests. But that's a whole nother topic.
Beautiful hemlocks. So,
yeah.
All right. So I think we got through everything today.
Did we really? And 2 minutes to spare?
Well, no, we're less than a minute now.
Oh, okay. But can I just show and tell?
Yeah.
I did bring in, if you want to know what to do right now, please go out and get this little guy out. This is winter bittercress. It has a nice root system. This is in my good garden soil.
Uh-huh.
So anyways, go out. Take those out.
Take them out.
Take
Do
them out.
Some weeding.
Yes.
This is the time. Deb Kanapke, thanks as always. You're great.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Deb Kanapke is an author, teacher, lecturer, blogger. We'll have a link to her blog on our website at WOSU.org. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.